Good evening. It's such a privilege to be with you all tonight. I feel like there's a little bit of a role reversal with Ryan leading singing and me up here teaching. I feel like maybe there's a typo in the duty roster or something, but I'm glad to take advantage of that. Friday, I boarded a plane, packed plane, in Dayton, Ohio. And all of us on the flight were, as everybody when they get on a plane, hoping to simply fly through to our destination. Of course, that was not to be. There was a foot and a half of snow in Minneapolis, and there was just no way we were going to make our connection and then get on to Phoenix. And there continued to be different snow delays that we had to deal with. And when a flight attendant got back to our area of the plane, a man sitting in front of us just lost it on her. He just went off on this flight attendant. And evidently, he'd been trying to get back to Phoenix for 3 days and had to stay over several times at different cities, and he didn't want to pay for another night in a hotel. And I can certainly understand being upset. That seems reasonable, you know, for a five-hour flight not to take 3 days. But the stewardess gently explained that she had very little control over the weather, and she said, you know, I'm happy to accommodate you, and he ended up getting on a different flight with us. The problem isn't Delta Airlines, and it's not a foot and a half of snow in Minneapolis, and, you know, it's not anything that was happening exactly there. The problem is that we still live here on planet Earth. And yet we walk around expecting things to go our way. Even the flight we got on wasn't perfect. You know, Jason talked about first world problems this morning. And we had little things like, you know, the movie went off midway through and it never came back on. And there was turbulence. And me and my coworker ended up in middle seats when we were supposed to be elsewhere. And you know, we still had to deal with cranky people, and we still got in an hour late. And there's all these little things that if we wanted to, we could complain about. I was thinking about all of this at, whatever, 30,000 feet up in the sky. And I was working on this lesson on meekness. And it seems to me that this right here is the problem that we run into. The reason we need meekness. Sometimes we might feel like we're being reasonable to want things to go the way they're supposed to be, right? For people to do what they're supposed to do. The problem is, we continue to be in a place where life doesn't go the way we want it to go. So it doesn't work that way. And life is full of turbulence and full of snow delays and full of cranky people because life on earth is not reasonable. And we make things worse by thinking we can push and yell and force our will on the world. Crush it and it'll do what we want it to do, right? And then we make it worse. God has a different way. He wants us to get meeked. We want to talk for a few moments, about what it really means to be meek in this world. I want to talk about the uncommon way. You know, this world does not like meekness. It does not walk in a path of meekness. I want to talk about an untranslatable word. One of the problems with understanding meekness is that there's a challenge for us to get the Bible concept as it was in the original. And then we'll talk for a minute about an unexpected reward of meekness. So meekness, you know, it seems like the whole world is going this way. They're imposing their will on the world, you know, going that way. But meekness, James 3 and verse 13 says, is the way of the wise. You want to be really wise? Then show your meekness, James says, by your gentleness of wisdom. By your good deeds that come in gentleness. Meekness is the way of a woman. You want to be a good woman? 1 Peter 3, verses 4 and 5 says you can't just braid your hair and wear jewelry and put on a dress and call that feminine and lovely. He says, but let it be with the hidden person of the heart. So what's it mean to be hidden? Or what's it mean to have this kind of heart? He says, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also, who hoped in God, used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. We need to get past this idea that for a woman to be quiet and submissive and gentle, that means that they're a doormat to the people around them and to their husband and to their children. There aren't many things more admirable or strong or beautiful in this world than a meek woman. I think most husbands will convey to their wife just how attractive and influential it is when they see meekness in their wife. But wait a minute. Meekness is the way of a man. You know, Jesus said, take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest for your souls. You want to be a man, look to Jesus. You know, Jesus was an example for everyone, but I want to emphasize that everything that is good about manliness, the courage, the strength, the discipline, and the gentleness, the meekness, and love was embodied perfectly in Jesus. This is where we can look to. And if meek and lowly doesn't sound like your idea of a real man, you need to rethink what it means to be a man. Finally, meekness is the way of God. You know, we look to Jesus as an example because he is God. But even in the Old Testament, Yahweh is described as meek. In 2 Samuel 22 and verse 36, David praises God saying, your gentleness or meekness has made me great. But there's this difficulty that meekness, it's just, you know, the Bible was written in Greek, in an old classical ancient Greek language called Koine Greek. And we're just trying to translate concepts over the centuries to what we know as modern English. This is the word that we translate meek. I think it's pronounced praus. And William Barclay, the Scottish Bible scholar, called it the most untranslatable of words. I saw that and I thought, okay, I got my work cut out for me if I want to preach on meekness. But I think that if we put a few puzzle pieces together, if we assemble how did the Greeks use this word, how was it used in the Old Testament, the word that's translated into the Greek in the Septuagint, meekness, we can start to understand what is it and how can we not only understand it, but live meekness. Because meekness, when it's lived, changes our life on earth. So there's four clues I want to put together to help us understand what meekness is and how we can live it. The first clue to understanding meekness is to look at the closest synonyms given by most Greek scholars. And these are the words gentleness and mildness. This word was used in the classical Greek literature often to describe a gentle breeze. So here's a question. As we start not only translating meekness, but applying meekness, are you as gentle breeze in the way you treat people? Titus 3:2 says that he wants us to treat all people with all meekness. It's not a lot of room for who aren't we treating with meekness there. We'll talk about an exception in a minute, but it makes me think about how am I treating my coworkers? Am I treating them with gentleness? What about the people that are direct reports to me or the person that's above me? How am I speaking to my children? Am I being gentle? What about my wife? What about my brothers and sisters? What about those who completely disagree with me or who offend me, who hurt me? What about the server that gets my order wrong? You know, sometimes we can be really great in the big things, and then these little things just surprise us. You know, some telemarketer or someone on the phone in India that's trying to help you through your Apple TV or whatever, and they get your order all wrong, and wow, that's where meekness is really needed, but that's where it can slip out the window. A second clue to translating meekness is looking to Aristotle's definition of meekness. Now, I don't put Aristotle up here as an expert on biblical virtue, but as an expert in the language that he spoke, and he defined what meekness meant to him in his writings. Now, for Aristotle, all virtues were a midpoint between some extreme and some complete lack of the virtue. So for Aristotle, meekness was the midpoint between having complete outbursts of anger, completely losing it, not having control of yourself, and having no anger at all. No backbone that would make you stand up whenever someone is being unjustly treated, whenever the wrong thing is being done, not having any response to it. So let's go from translating meekness again to applying meekness. Meekness in the Bible is the way we need to lead and correct. In Galatians 6:1, we're told how to restore a weak or fallen brother with all meekness. We need to bring a gentle approach. Does that mean that we're being timid or wishy-washy about what the truth is? No, we're being clear. There's a firmness to meekness with the gentleness. With the gentleness of a gentle breeze. In 2 Timothy 2:25, Paul says we need to bring this spirit of meekness to those who are opposing the right thing, that maybe God will bring them to repentance. And in 1 Peter 3:15, we see that even people, we're not correcting, but answering, people who are outside of the body of Christ and asking about the hope within us, we need to respond to them with all meekness and fear when we tell them about Jesus. Not with, what in the world are you thinking? But with meekness, with gentleness, but with clarity, with sincerity, and firmness. One exception to this that I noted, and I think it's worth sharing, is found in 1 Corinthians 4:12. Paul says here to the Corinthians, "When I come to you, shall I come to you with love and meekness, or with a rod?" He doesn't say that either one of those would be wrong. One of them seems clearly to be preferred. He would rather come to them with meekness and love. And of course, coming with a rod doesn't mean he doesn't love them, and it doesn't mean that he isn't going to have any gentleness. But I think it's worth noting that there are some times when we step up a little bit beyond what we would consider gentleness, what we would consider meekness, and start to imagine Jesus, the meek and lowly, whenever he went into the temple and saw things that were completely unacceptable. Did Jesus lose control? No, he did not. Jesus knew exactly what he was doing. But he let the firmness of his anger show up. Shall I come to you with meekness and a rod? So whenever we think about correcting our brother, whenever we think about correcting our children or leading by example or in our words, we need to know that the preferable way is always to be gentle, to be meek. But remembering not to compromise. A third clue to the meaning of meekness is found in the fact that the word meek is the word that was very often used in the Greek language and in Koine Greek to describe a trained and bridled animal. You know, there are great beasts. I was thinking about Shamu, and about some of the giant creatures that we've trained, right? That we've brought under our control, our guidance. They do what we say, what the master, what their trainer tells them to do, in spite of the fact that, you know, they originally would be wild. I think of a stallion, you know, a stallion who's been taught, trained, broken to where the stallion goes where its rider wants it to go. Whenever we're meek and lowly, it means we are in complete submission to our master. We are under his control. We've gone from wild and uncontrolled to completely submissive to the one leading us. It's not so much self-control as God control to be under his leadership. Well, applying that, James 1:21 says, whenever you hear the word, you receive it with all meekness. Get rid of guile, get rid of anger, get rid of all the filthiness that's going to keep you from changing and completely submitting to whatever God tells you to do. That is hard to do, and that takes meekness. Oh, I mean, it's easy to do in the things that we already agree with him in, but it's hard to do in the things that we really need to be chastised in. Meekness is the gentleness to submit ourselves to God's control and follow him wherever he tells us to go. Finally, there's a particular clue or key, I think, to understanding meekness in looking at the life of Moses. Moses, we're told in Numbers 13, was the meekest man in all the earth. I find it interesting that unless somebody came back and added that later, it was Moses himself who wrote that. He was the meekest man in all the earth. And that shows up in a particular story that we'll come back to, where he could have responded in a lot of different ways, and it seems to me have been just. But he puts that parenthetical statement to help us understand, this is why Moses didn't react. This is why Moses responded in a way that put him under God's control and let God be his defender. You know, the life of Moses, I've learned a lot from studying the life of Moses. The life of Moses and the path that he got to get him to where he was has affected me a lot as I've thought about, how do I get to a place where God can really use me? How do we get to a place where God can say, all right, here's your purpose. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to get some things done for me. Because a lot of times, I want to start out the way Moses started out. You know, in Acts 7, we see a picture of Moses there at the beginning of his life, in his first 40 years, that really is completely the opposite of meekness. In Acts 7, verses 22 to 29, it says, Moses was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians, and he was a man of power and words and deeds. Now, this sounds like a man qualified to do God's work when it comes to freeing the Israelites from Egypt. He was trained. He had an in with the big guys up top. He could get something done. But when he was approaching the age of 40, it entered his mind to visit his brethren, the sons of Israel. And when he saw one of them being treated unjustly, he defended him and took vengeance for the oppressed by striking down the Egyptian. Now, he had the best motives, and he thought that he was doing the will of God, right? Was he bridled? Was he under control? No, seems like he just lost it. It seems like he was wild. He killed a guy. How is that going to accomplish God's purpose? It says, and he supposed that his brethren understood that God was granting them deliverance through him, but they did not understand. This verse, this idea, isn't found anywhere in the Old Testament account about Moses. Moses had a plan. Moses had looked around at the clues of, this is where God put me, look at how qualified I am to make a difference. And he said, you know what? I'm the man. I'm the guy that's going to get this job done for you. God, you just, you know, Don't worry, I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to free these guys. And then he lost control. The people didn't understand it. Of course, right after that, one of the men says, Moses went and found two Israelites fighting together, and he tried to bring them together, and he said, "Men, you're brethren, why do you injure one another?" But the one who was injuring his neighbor pushed him away, saying, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? You do not mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday, do you?" At this remark, Moses fled and became an alien in the land of Midian, where he became the father of two sons. Moses ran away. He didn't do the job God wanted him to do, or that he thought that God wanted him to do there. And he spent 40 years humiliated, probably, lowered, certainly, dejected. It's a clue in the word, the origin of the word, the Hebrew word for meekness. This word that talks about Moses as meek is praus in the Septuagint, the New Testament, the Greek translation of the Old Testament. But in the Old Testament, this word comes from a root that says affliction, or a depressing influence that comes from affliction. And then it comes to mean lowliness or meekness. Moses, for those 40 years, was lowered by his affliction. He learned meekness. But he still had some lessons to learn when he went to the other extreme. What happened when he went to the burning bush? And finally, God calls him. He says, "Okay, now you're ready for me to use you." And Moses said, No. I'm not ready. I'm not your guy." He went from the man to not the man, really. You know, extremes, right? He had learned the humility that he needed, but he hadn't learned the resolve and the firmness that comes from committing 100% to surrendering ourselves to God's will. He still wasn't bridled and trained by God to go where the master sends him, to go where the rider takes him. So we learn from Moses a way to react. A way to react with meekness. Because here, a few years after this, in Numbers 12, verses 1 through 13, we find this story about Moses and Miriam and Aaron. And we learn how that he has submitted himself. Miriam and Aaron have decided that they've had enough of being Moses this and Moses that, and him being the main star of the show all the time. And they start to rebel against him. They say, "Hey, we're important too." Aaron says, I'm the high priest. Miriam says, "I'm a prophetess. Our little brother Moses getting all the attention." Did Moses react? Did Moses say, "Strike him down, humble them"? No, he let God defend him. And, of course, Miriam has an affliction. But this is the story where we learn that Moses was humbler and meeker than all the world. So, how are we reacting? Whenever difficult things come our way, whenever people attack us or offend us, are we letting God defend us? Are we swallowing our offenses like pills rather than feasting on them with bitterness, like Alan talked about this morning? So, praus. We might think that gentleness is the same thing as timidity. We might think that resolve is the same thing as willfulness. But really, meekness is the gentle strength to surrender to God's will. How can we have humility without timidity? Well, in 1 Corinthians 6:7, Paul says, you should let people, let your brothers take advantage of you if that's the only alternative to taking them to law. We should completely surrender ourselves. That might sound like no backbone. That's completely different than being timid. In 2 Timothy 1:7, we're told we're not given a spirit of timidity, but of power and of love and of discipline. How can we have resolve without willfulness? In Philippians 2, verses 6 and 7, we see this picture of Jesus. It says that he didn't consider equality with God something to be grasped, but emptied himself and became a servant. There's this story that they tell. I think it's from South America. I guess they have, there's a way that they catch monkeys. And they have these coconuts that they have a little hole in, and they put rice in it. And the monkeys stick their hands in the coconut traps that are tied to something, and they grab the rice, and then they can't get out because they're holding it with a fist. If they just let go of the rice, they could get away. But they won't. They want that rice. They're hungry. And so they pull and they fight, but they don't let go. There's a lesson for us from Jesus. When we see something that we want to grasp, we want to hold on to empty ourselves. But not just to empty ourselves. Remember, Moses emptied himself, but he didn't fill himself with the will of God. Jesus emptied himself, but he said in Matthew 10:34, I came not to bring peace, but to bring a sword. He came with fierceness and firmness, even in his gentle resolve. So the best definition I've been able to come up with for this word meekness is gentle resolve. If we can learn to live with gentle resolve, in the way we encounter everyone, in the way we encounter our trials, it'll change the way we live. If we can learn to humble ourselves when we suffer, to empty ourselves when we grasp, to consider ourselves when we respond to the things that come our way, to consider how far we are, as Jason said this morning, and as Galatians 6:1 suggests, from where we should be whenever we go to respond to our brother or sister. Finally, I want to talk for a minute about the unexpected reward for meekness. In Matthew 4, Satan offers Jesus the world for worshiping him. Remember that? He said, you know, if you just bow down to me, I'll give you all of this. And Jesus turns him down. I find it interesting that just 20 verses later, in chapter 5, verse 5, Jesus promises an unexpected inheritance for the meek. He promises to give us the earth. What does this mean? Like a lot of the Beatitudes, this is a study in contrast. Who would expect the meek to inherit the earth? What does that even mean? It seems he's referencing Psalm 37, which contrasts the downfall of the wicked with the righteous and meek who received the blessings of God. And in 37:11, David says, the meek shall inherit the earth and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. As Christians, our great awaited inheritance isn't here. It's beyond this earth. And a meek person probably wouldn't say, I want this earth. You know, that doesn't sound like meekness to me. But I want to suggest that to walk in meekness with God is to inherit the earth. To live in the earth, even in all our trials, as David said in Psalm 37:11, delighting ourselves in the abundance of peace. That word is shalom, security, wellness, happiness, the peace that comes only from God. Compare 1 Corinthians 3:21 to 23, where Paul says that all things, including specifically the world, belong to us. He says, things to come, things past, things present, the earth, after the earth. Everything is yours, life and death, because we're in Christ and Christ is in God. The meek have learned a different way to live in this world that lets them receive the gifts of the world while walking through the problems that frustrate and ruin others. To be able to speak the truth without losing a friend. On the contrary, perhaps to deepen that friendship. To be able to handle frustration without losing your cool. On the contrary, perhaps, to find greater clarity and calm in the midst of those challenges. To face your failures without losing your resolve. Rather, to muster greater resolve to do God's will. And greater confidence as we trust in God's power and not our own. To learn that gentle humility and fierce commitment to God that bring us peace and calmness. Zephaniah 2:3 says, "Seek ye the Lord, all the earth, all ye who are meek." The Lord is the real gift of meekness, of walking here in submission to Him. Jesus offered His invitation. "I'm going to give you rest, for I am meek and lowly at heart. Come to me. If you're weary, if you got burdens, come to Jesus. Obey Him. Be baptized in faith and commitment to Him." Won't you please come forward if you have a need while we stand and sing.